my questions. Oh, here are they.
You interviewing me? Is that what's happening here?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It could be a mutual interview, but I think it's better if I were to interview you.
We're here live in the truck on I-10 interviewing Efren Puron on Parole Martinez. And I gotta know, what does it feel like to be the apprentice of Mr. HVAC Tactical? All right. There you heard it, folks. Zero response. We stopped him dead in his tracks today. Tune in next time.
What is up, guys? I'm here with Ben from HVC Tactical. You guys already know the deal. You guys love him. Or hate him. Yeah, that's definitely something that's been prevalent for whatever. Yes,
sure.
Of course, right? But yeah, nonetheless, we love him. And we know the rest of you guys love him too. And we're just here enjoying our trip out to go do some work. You guys will see a little bit of that moving forward. But why not waste a couple minutes talking to him and getting a bird's eye view of, you know, several different things from his past and what he sees in the future and stuff like that. And so I have a couple questions here that we can run down and see how Ben answers them. So first off, let me ask, how do you feel today, Ben?
It's a killer microphone. Is that a Milwaukee mic?
This is a Milwaukee mic, yes.
You know what, Efren? I am unstoppable.
You are unstoppable.
As usual.
You know, that's hard to beat. You know that? A lot of people just say, good.
It's a choice.
It's a choice. Yeah. That is right. So, Ben, I think for a lot of us out there that have gone through growing pains, we tend to have our favorite memories in life, and we also have our most hated memories. Right now, off the top of your head, can you think of any memories that just stood out to you as being one of the best memories ever to you that essentially maybe shaped your entire future in HVAC?
Best memory? Probably not it, but a memory that I often think about in this industry. You know, you're constantly injuring yourself, cutting yourself, putting yourself in a situation where you smash a finger or whatever, right? You just got to kind of be tough. You got to go through it, and the job has to be completed. And when I was a kid, I remember my dad moved into, my dad had an HVAC company. My dad moved into a new shop, and he had to remodel, move a wall to increase the size of the shop. In order to move the wall, he had to take the old wall down first, right? So my dad, they had all the sheetrock off. It was just studs. And I remember I was probably like, man, fourth grade, maybe fifth grade. And I remember they're up there and they're hammering and hitting this wall. Boom, boom. Give my grandpa gives it a couple more licks, and this wall just lets loose, right? And it falls down. And I just remember looking up and put my hands up like this, and that whole wall just fell on me. And it was probably like, it's probably about a 10-foot tall wall, probably, I don't know, 14 feet wide, but just a wall of 2x4s, right? Just fell down right on top of me. And as I went like this, the wall hit me, I fell down to the floor. And I remember, like, I started kind of starting to cry, you know, with the lower lip.
Yeah.
And I remember my dad looked at me, and he's like, he goes, oh, stop it, you're fine, get up, right?
Wow.
And look at all those tanks.
Oh yeah.
And I remember thinking to myself, like, yeah, I guess I am okay, you know, a little scraped up on the arms or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess I was all right. And I just remember back to that, because it was situations like that in my childhood that really shaped me into how to be strong and how to be tough and how to overcome, you know, the physical obstacles, if you will, right? The physical fatigue and the injuries and stuff like that. Now, I'm not saying all that to be like, you know, quit being a freaking, the door on that Humvee is open. On that MRAP or whatever.
You did not see that. You're making that up.
I swear, it was wide open. And I don't say all that to be like, you know, suck it up and be tough or whatever. I say all that because, you know, there's times where, like, you don't really have a choice but to suck it up and be tough and get the job done, you know?
Yeah.
But I'm all for, you know, working smarter, not harder. I'm all for working safe, wearing proper PPE. I'm all for all that stuff, right? Don't put yourself in a situation where you're going to get hurt. But I do feel like there's also something to be said for learning how to be tough. And I think in the old school days, you know, where it was like, hey, man, you need to learn how to be a man. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I mean, I get that, right? Like, I think we live in a world today where, yeah, we want you to man up. We want you to be tough. But there's also a balance, right? There's a balance in the mix there. And I feel like coming from the old school, adding some of it with the new school, I think you can find a really good balance. But the old school way of doing things is not necessarily the best way or even the safest way to do it, right?
Yeah.
But also, if you just stuck to just the new school way, eh, that's probably not the best way to do it either, right? I'm going to go suck up my thumb and just not even go to work. How about that, right? So yeah. I think there's a balance between the two. But it was things like that that really helped shape my childhood for sure.
So I guess what I'm gathering is, to an extent, you shouldn't discount the fact of just getting back in there. You know, if you cut yourself, just keep going. You know, man up to a degree or woman up to a degree.
What's the option? You gotta go home?
Well, so, and that's, I guess, a follow-up question to what I was gonna ask you is, for me, I grew up in the new school where I was able to see some employees, you know, fellow employees of mine who would injure themselves to a very slight degree, in my opinion. And they would have to
Can't work.
Yeah, like they can't work. They have to go to urgent care. I wasn't raised that way, but I could see that to a degree, it's I guess okay, and it's getting more okay. That doesn't mean that it's good. It's just getting more okay within the workplace. And so for you, being able to have a little bit of both, growing up in that hard knock life, I guess you could say, where you're expected to just prowl through. And then also getting to experience this new school kind of way, because you were also an employer as well. So I'm sure those had those own challenges. But anyway, back to what I was trying to say is, like, how do you specifically determine the difference of, hey, maybe I did push this guy a little too hard, or maybe I pushed myself a little too hard when I should have taken a break and walked down and healed up a little bit?
I think for me, it's like, I'm smart enough to know what I can and can't fix. So I'm a fixer, right? I think most guys in our industry are fixers. That's what we do every day.
Yeah.
But I'm a fixer in life in general, right? Like, there's a problem and it's just like, well, I can fix that, right? And and one of the biggest problems with relationships is, like, when women start to tell, like, a husband about a problem, right? The man immediately is just like, oh, I got your solution for you right here, right? And a lot of times, the wife doesn't want a solution to the problem. The wife just wants to be heard, right? And so, being a fixer, like, if I do so, like, one time I was on a roof and I got my finger caught in a blower wheel, right?
Yeah.
Don't ask. It was stupid. It was my fault. I own up to it. I'm not going to tell you how it happened, but nonetheless, I chewed up my finger pretty bad.
You know, we got time to spare, just saying.
And I remember pulling my hand out, and I looked at my hand, and my finger just looked like a hamburger, right?
Oh.
And I thought to myself, I can't fix that. Like, I'm smart enough to know what I can fix, and smart enough to know what it's outside of my realm of expertise, right?
Yeah.
And a finger that looks like, if it's just a cut, dude, no problem, right? I can bandage that thing up. If I had to put emergency stitches in it, I could if I needed to, right?
Yeah.
But I looked at it, it's just hamburger, and I was like, I can't, there's nothing I can do, dude. Like, if I don't get this fixed properly, this is gonna mess up my finger probably for the rest of my life, right?
Yeah.
And so I had to make a decision in that moment that I needed to get off of that roof, and I needed to go to the emergency room or to the emergency clinic, whatever you call that place.
Yeah.
I've only been into, like, one in my whole life, but that was it.
Yeah.
And I had to go get stitches in my finger, right? And so, but when I was done getting stitches, I went back to the job and I finished the job.
Dude.
So,
are you kidding me?
And the office was like, just go home, dude, just go home. And I'm like, dude, number one, all my tools are still on the roof at this place, right?
Yeah.
I said, I got to go get my tools, number one. And number two is, like, let me just finish dealing with what I was dealing with. I was almost done with the job. Let me just put it back together, put the panels back on. I'll clean up, clean the blood off of everything, and then I'll go home. Then we'll deal with that. But yeah, it's, you know, it's things like that. I think most people today would probably just call it a day and go home, right? And there's nothing wrong with that, right? I don't want it to come across like I'm like, hey, you guys are being a bunch of babies. Like, man up, bro, you know?
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, it's just like, it's a choice, right? Like, I knew what I could fix. I knew what I couldn't fix. I went and had it fixed, right? Yeah. When it was done being fixed, yes, I could have gone home. I was told to go home, but I made a choice to not go home. I made a choice to go finish, right?
Yeah.
And I think that just goes to show the dedication, the level of dedication that one is to their craft and to their job, to their employer, right?
Yeah.
To say, hey, look, I started this thing. I want to finish it. Yeah, I'm not at 100% right now, but I have enough in me to get it done. You know what I mean? Now, if I had felt like, man, I feel dizzy, I feel woozy, like I've lost too much blood, I for sure would not have got back, for sure wouldn't have driven across town, right? Sure wouldn't have got back on a ladder, got on a roof, and got put myself back into a dangerous situation. Again, I'm smart enough to know what I'm capable of and what I'm not capable of.
Yeah.
So, I think that really boils down to you need to know your own limits and know what you're able to do.
Yeah, and I think I had a conversation with Mike Mayberry, HVAC reefer guy, and hopefully he's watching this, but I think he said a similar thing to me. As you guys probably know, and as you know, Ben, he's big into safety. Big into safety because a life isn't replaceable. And so for me, he said something very similar to exactly what you were talking about. And when I was chatting with him, was knowing your limits, knowing what you're capable of. In your experience, when, I don't know, you've had crazy stories when you were younger, but in your experience, what kind of pushed your limits where you were able to finally start learning yourself and like understand the limits of your body? You know, at which point, what kind of experiences did you encounter that you were like, okay, maybe this cuts a little too deep. I should stop what I'm doing.
Oh man, that's a good question. I mean, I've definitely pushed my body to the limits, whether that be in an extremely tight situation where you can't move and you start feeling claustrophobic in a crawl space or inside of a piece of duct. I mean, or...
You've been inside a duct?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like a flex duct or sheet metal duct?
Sheet metal. And, you know, when I was a kid, you know, I would get pushed into ductwork to seal stuff and then they'd pull me back out backwards, right?
Oh, my goodness.
Or, hey, there's a cop right there, so
I do see that.
Bear with me, people.
We're doing the speed limit.
Exactly. Or like, oh hey, I dropped this down in that hole. I'm gonna lower you down in there, right? And I'm gonna need you to crawl. Then when you come back, make sure you put your feet right here. We'll grab your feet, pull you back out, right?
So
yeah. I mean, as a young guy in the industry, I've done a lot of stuff like that. But I've also been in, you know, 130, 140 degree attic spaces, right,
yeah,
for long periods of time, and you know, making sure you're staying hydrated. You got to know when you're able to come out. You know, crawling back in really tight attic spaces, swimming in insulation. Like, I've done a lot of probably stuff I probably shouldn't have done.
Yeah.
But again, it pushes you and your limits to know what you're capable of doing and what you're not capable of doing. And for me, like, I'm an adventurous type. Like, we would go ride dirt bikes and stuff out into the mountains in Arizona, and we'd go into like old mining shafts and stuff like that, right?
So really?
you crawl back in there, and dude, it's like pitch black. You turn the lights off and you can't see your hand in front of your face, right?
Dude.
And it's kind of spooky, right? But
yeah,
you man up, right? And you want for a little adventure, you want to go for one, you go down there, you climb down these ladders that go 150 foot down, and you know, you're just down there seeing what these old timers were seeing, right? And
yeah,
and I've also done like tough mudders and stuff like that.
Oh, dude,
and those are pretty gnarly. You know, the first one I ever did, my brother-in-law was like, dude, you better train, bro. You better train. And I really didn't. And I pushed myself to the brink of probably a heat stroke.
Oh.
When I was done, I got sick for about 3 days afterward. I had never felt like that before. I had never exhausted myself to that level before.
Yeah.
But now I know what it feels like.
Would you do a tough mudder again?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah.
They're so fun. They're challenging, but they're so fun. Switching topics just a little bit is you're originally from Arizona, and currently you're living...
Don't tell anybody.
Okay, I won't tell anybody. But you're currently in Texas now. So you've gotten to experience those two extreme temperatures of hot and humid or dry and humid.
Dry and humid.
You choose dry and humid?
No, you said
hot. Oh, sorry, dry and hot. Dry and hot.
I'm like, wow, okay, that's different.
So dry and hot, and then hot and humid. Which do you prefer? I would imagine both kind of suck in their own right.
You know, now that I'm used to Texas, I prefer the Texas weather. But when I first moved to Texas, I was like, what is this? You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, you just don't sweat like that in Arizona, you know? Yeah. But now I come back to Arizona and like my lips get super dry and my nasal passages get dried out. And it's like, I'm just like, just, you know, chapstick and everything, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's different for sure. And your body just acclimates to it, right? Like people ask, how are you in attics like that all the time? How are you in a 130 degree attic like all day long? Well, your body acclimates to it. You just get used to it, you know? Doesn't mean that it's pleasant,
sure.
Right? It just means that you just get used to it and you learn how to deal with it. You know, I got to come down for breaks. I got to stay hydrated, you know, stuff like that. So,
yeah.
Again, knowing your limits,
right?
And knowing what you're capable of doing and handling and what you're not. So.
Do you think there's other things that knowing your limits kind of plays into outside of the realm of HVAC?
It plays into life.
Would you be willing to give me an example of something right off the cuff?
Yeah, you're about to marry a woman who you can't handle. Know your limits, brother.
That's fair. Yeah. Anyway, let's get back to a different question here. Because I could talk about this all day. Here's a good one. So you and your family have essentially been running their own business for a very long time through several different generations, and from the time that you were a little kid to, you know, getting every taste once in a while of getting out into the field, maybe seeing a little bit of that business, now that you're third generation, what were some of the problems that were a little bit more prevalent back in the day when your grandpa was running his show to when your father took over, and then finally when you are inherited, you know, that third generation level of business?
Man, you ask some good questions, man.
I try to just ask good questions here.
I'm sure trying to think. I mean, I feel like, dude, the time, they're three completely different times.
Yeah.
There was a lot less problems and headaches back then. I mean, technology wasn't what it was today, right? But dude, my grandfather, like, he was installing furnaces and swamp coolers and sheet metal ductwork. Like, it doesn't get any easier than that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Back then, it's not like it was easy work. Like, it's still hard work, don't get me wrong.
Sure.
But a swamp cooler, like, the life expectancy on that thing is like forever. I mean, you know,
yeah.
What I mean? Clean it and keep it clean, put new pads and stuff in it, right? Keep the calcium, and sometimes you get some rust and you got to replace a few little things, but you know, it's like the reliability is just through the roof, right? And then you get into R22 systems, and even in the, you know, the early days, we had some issues with 410A, but you know, for the most part, like, dude, single stage air conditioners in that low end technology was like, dude, it was super reliable.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then, you know, you step into like my era, uh-huh. And yeah, we have all this technology, right? Dude, you can run a business from a phone, right? Like, you can run multiple businesses from a phone. Speaking of running a business from a cell phone, go to the website, HVACtactical.com, check out Field Pulse. Field Pulse is an all-in-one software CRM that'll allow you to run your business from anywhere in the field, from an iPad, from a laptop, from an iPhone. It pretty much does everything that you need to do from a service-based industry aspect, but it also is super, super affordable. So go to the website, check it out, Field Pulse. See ya. But then you're installing all these inverter units, and you know, you got brownouts and power surges, and
yes.
Hey, my unit ain't working, and blah, 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 I have communication problems. It's like, dude, it's just always something, you know what I mean? So
yeah.
There's like, technology has been great. It's advanced a lot, but it's also caused a lot of headaches for a lot of people. And so, you know, I love the inverter technology, but you know, it's sometimes it's not as reliable as it could be, or even as it should be. So, yeah, I think they're just three completely different eras. Each one has its own problems, but I think the more tech you involve into something, the more potential problems that you can have.
Yeah, I think that's also prevalent with pushing any boundaries. I mean, for those of you guys who know a little bit about electric motors, EV cars, things of that nature, like, nobody was prepared for the fact that they don't do so well in the winter, you know? And so for a lot of people that were up in the northern states, they were struggling with their, I mean, especially here in Texas when we had that snowstorm, you know? So that snowstorm knocked off a lot of people and pissed them off because their car wasn't running and it was essential for them to get food and supplies for their family.
Well, that's, you know, you can blame the car manufacturers if you want, right? But at the same time, there's a lack of education for the people who are the consumers who are buying these products, right?
Yeah.
Think of this, all the people who have bought solar, and then there was all these power outages in Texas from this big last couple of years, these big snowstorms and winter storms or polar vortex, whatever the heck you want to call it, right? These things roll through, knock out all this power, and all these people are like, well, I have solar, I'm still supposed to have power. No, dude, it's not the way that it works, you know, and that's just a huge lack of education. And then whoever sold the people that system, obviously that conversation was never had, right? Yeah. There was just this assumption that it was supposed to be. And it's very possible that maybe the sales guy even lied to him about it. Who knows, right? Like sales guys are not always 100%. You know
sure,
I mean?
So, sure.
So it's just interesting. I just think that every generation when it comes to technology has a lack of education on the consumer side, and every generation, even in our own industry, has a lack of education. And I think lack of education is one of two of the biggest problems in our industry. You have to keep learning, man. You have to keep educating yourself, because if you don't, our industry is just going to pass you by. There's always something new to learn.
Yeah. Do you think that going back towards some of the problems that you were experiencing, or that your grandpa was experiencing, and then your dad inherited, and then you coming into it, I don't know what it was like when your grandpa was running his business, or when your dad first started running his business. But what I do know is there was a time, and even still now, I think it's fair to say that we're in a run and gun culture. There was a company that I was working for that would knock out 8 calls in a day. There's other companies out there that boast 14 calls a day. And for me, I can't be a reliable and accurate technician if I'm running 14 calls, you know, even more than 8 calls a day. Like 8 calls, I would say, is the absolute max. And that's starting as, you know, from the crack of dawn till, I don't know, maybe 8 p.m. if I had to guess. So anyway, nonetheless, it's hard to be accurate. And so for you, understanding what this current run and gun culture is, was your grandpa experiencing the same run and gun culture when he was running his company?
Dude. No way. So
what was the pace of repair and service?
Remember, these are furnaces and coolers, right? Yeah. In our market, anyway. And there was some air conditioners, right? But you got to remember, dude, air conditioners really haven't been around that long. They really kind of started getting put into homes in like the 1950s, right? And you had to have like good money. You had to make decent money to be able to put them into a home, right? So, you know, when my grandfather was doing stuff, he wasn't really doing a whole lot of air conditioners. It was more swamp coolers in our industry. I mean, in our market down in southern Arizona, right? Like, dude, a swamp cooler will freeze you out at nighttime.
Yeah.
You know, if the climate is dry. But once you hit monsoon season and the rains and stuff show up, like, oh yeah, the bed sheets begin to feel wet. You know?
So,
it's not a great feeling. But I think back then too, dude, like, it was just such a more simpler time back then. It was, dude, people were just nicer. People weren't entitled. I'm sure there were some entitled people,
sure.
But back then, I think it was just a different pace. It was a different time where people were just more genuine. People cared about other people more. It wasn't a me type generation like we are today.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So
I think another thing too that our generation, my generation, is growing up in is consumerism, where it's, well, now in this economy currently, it's more of a repair market. I think you'd agree with that. But prior to that, for a long time, it was consume, 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 consume. If something broke, just buy something new. And of course, that's cool, you know, if you got the money to do it, but sometimes you don't. And right now is the perfect time where people are starting to pay a little bit more for repairs rather than getting full-on replacements, you know?
Yeah, we're definitely seeing, we're in a market, a repair market versus replace market right now. And it's interesting to see that, right? And being that I'm not, like, actively in the field selling these jobs anymore. I'm not able to see that firsthand.
Yeah.
I'm having to hear that from other companies in the surrounding area. So.
Yeah. I was curious to know, when did you...
Long time ago.
Well, that's probably going to be your answer here in a little bit. When did you feel like you adopted this mindset behind HVAC Tactical? This, you know, I guess you could say a blend of hardworking, dedicated, you know, tactical. When did this mindset really start settling in for you?
Man, that's a good question. Another good question, Efren. man, I don't really have... I wish there was like this epiphany moment, right?
Yeah.
Where I could be like, oh, I know exactly what it was. I just don't have that. I just think that I've always had this like attention to detail when doing things that I cared about, right? And then the older that I got and the more I started mastering my craft in HVAC, the more I realized like, hey, no matter what it is that you're doing, like anything worth doing is worth doing well, right?
Yeah.
And so I would see other people do jobs or do things, right? And I'm just like, dude, that's just so like, it's just so half-assed, dude. Why are you doing that? You know what I mean? Like, dude, take the extra 2 minutes and run it like this. It just will look so much better. Like, that just looks like trash, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think it's just growing up, just doing that kind of stuff. I've just always been like, man, this would look really cool. I've always been the guy who is like, this would look really cool if we did it like this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think maybe some of that stems from like watching like movies and seeing things on TV, and I'm like, oh man, I want that. I would look really cool to have on my wall or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I don't have like a specific time.
Do you think there was someone in particular that really just ingrained it in you? Maybe one person over another? For me, I remember when I was growing up, my dad and my grandpa were the two hardest people that I knew. And so one experience in particular is when I was growing up, I was riding a bicycle, and the bicycle that I was taught on had the brakes that you'd spin the pedals backwards, you know? And so for once,
I was... Those are little kid bikes, bro.
For a little kid at the time, okay? So... It's not that funny.
Baby effort. Okay, keep going.
So anyway, so then finally it was time for me to upgrade into, you know, one of those more BMX style bikes where you actually have brakes on the handlebars. And I thought at the time that I was riding the bicycle that the brakes were still going backwards. I didn't know what these little, you know, control thingies were on the handlebars of the bike. And so, you know, I'm little Efren's riding along, having a great time, and then all of a sudden, you know, gets tired of riding and decides, okay, it's time to, you know, RTB, return to base, and chill out a little bit. Well, anyway, on his trail back, you know, he's riding along, and it's time for him to start slowing down, and there's a wall right where his grandparents' house is, and he just couldn't stop. I just couldn't stop. I freaked out, and I ended up crashing into the wall. I hurt myself pretty badly, but my grandpa was watching me the entire time. By the time that he saw me fall, he didn't do anything else but start laughing and clapping, saying, good job, good job. And I would get so irritated by that. It annoyed me. I hated it. It belittled me, but at the same time, it also made me the individual that I am, because rather than crying and complaining about it, something that's not going to fix the problem of pain, you know, I'd rather spend that time and energy into getting up, dusting myself off, and then caring for any wounds that I inflicted on myself, you know. And so that was the lesson that my grandpa taught me.
Well, first of all, I grew up, I'm an 80s baby, so we didn't even have brakes on our bikes, bro, right? We used our foot on the back tire, right?
Yeah.
That was gangster mode back then, dude. You know, I think, you know, what was the alternative for your grandfather, right? Like, oh my gosh, are you okay?
Yeah.
You know, like, that's the worst thing you could do.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when my kids were little, they would fall or they would do something, and like whoever was in the vicinity would be like, oh my gosh. I'm like, stop, don't do that. And they just look at me like, what are you talking? I'm like, we don't do that around here. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And my kids are pretty tough. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you know, you do something and it hurts, and, you know, they're like, oh, you know what I mean? But they're not going to be like just breaking down and crying because they stubbed their toe or something like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think how you react to a child starts to form how they think, right? And so I'm trying to remember what they say, but like a baby from like birth, like their only thing that they are really afraid of is like, I think it's something like falling and something else. I can't remember what it is, but everything else is like taught, right? Okay. So it's like there's only a couple natural things that you have this natural reaction to of like fear, right?
Yeah.
But anything other than that, it's something that's taught, you know? And so, you know, like all this stuff running around, even in culture today, in politics and everything, and the whole woke thing that everybody's got going on, right?
Yeah.
So it's like,
yeah,
that's all taught stuff, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like if you're racist, it's because you've been taught to be racist, right?
Yeah,
not agree. Because you're just naturally racist. So yeah, I think a lot of the stuff in our lives today, it's 99% of it is something that you've been taught, and anything that you've been taught, you can reteach yourself to do something else. You just have to reprogram yourself and get into a different habit of doing things.
Yeah, so. Which is a long topic that I'd like to get into if we have enough time. But I'm also curious to know, because we spoke about it a little bit earlier about Ben being in the aviation industry to some degree, maybe not the industry, more of what? Let's just say it. Pilot? Is that appropriate? Can we say pilot? I mean, it's like getting 99% done with an install, you know? Like, are you really done?
Technically, I don't have a pilot's license. Technically,
okay.
I still have a student's pilot's license.
Okay.
I never finished my test, but, you know, it's like, are you a pilot when you get the license, or are you a pilot when you're piloting a plane by yourself, right? I would say you're a pilot when you're piloting a plane by yourself, right?
Okay, well, for lack of better words, if I was to give you an airplane, which I'm sure you would probably love, you'd be able to turn it on.
I'd love that very much.
You'd be able to turn it on and then get up in the sky if you wanted to, right? Whether it's legal or not is a different story.
100%. Yeah.
Okay. So, what drove your passion into aviation?
Man, I just always have been fascinated with aviation. And
was,
you know,
it the convenience?
As a kid, space and the space shuttle and all that other stuff, right? So, my uncle had a plane when I was a kid. It was like a homemade plane he made in the garage, right? The wings were cloth and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
He would fly that all over the place. And they bulldozed this little dirt landing strip behind my grandparents' house when I was a kid. And so I've always loved it. And as I got older, I went flying several times with my uncle in a different plane. And I just caught the bug and I just wanted to fly. And so I've spent the last several years just tinkering with airplanes and flying and stuff like that, and yeah, I love it. At some point I'll have an airplane, so
that's exciting. Do you have a preference in brand of aircraft or a type of aircraft or engine?
There's so many, dude. It's like but having an airplane is like, you have to buy the airplane for whatever the mission is, right? So what are you gonna do? You have a family? Well, you need a plane big enough for your family, right? If
yeah.
it's just you and another person and you're just doing weekend getaways, well, you can get away with a smaller airplane, right? So
yeah.
It's like anything. It's like you have to look at an airplane almost like as if it's a car, right?
Yeah.
I'm not gonna drive an SUV when I can do it in a freaking, I don't know, a Porsche, right?
Yeah.
Like, or a Ferrari. It just depends on what it is that we're trying to do. So it's almost like you need multiple airplanes, right?
Yeah.
Just like you would need
yeah.
multiple cars. So so moral of the story is, anybody watching, I need more money so I can buy multiple airplanes. So, yeah.
In case you guys have a couple extra bucks, I'll take a couple extra bucks too. So you and I probably share very similar ideals, and that's being a truck guy. I think by far having a truck supersedes any other type of vehicle, and that would be my first vehicle under all circumstances first. Once I have a truck, then I can get into a sports car or get into a van or something like that. But I just feel like trucks are so utilitarian. It's hard to go wrong with a truck, especially if it's 4x4. You know, our weather is crazy, and so if you can be a little proactive in having a 4x4 truck, being able not only to help yourself out, but to help other people out is cool too. In terms of airplanes, is there an aircraft in particular that you're like, man, maybe this just makes the most amount of sense? Like, it checks 9 out of the 10 boxes or 8 out of the 10 boxes in getting. You got your sports cars, you got your BMWs of airplanes.
Yeah, probably, you know? Like a Kodiak.
A Kodiak.
Yeah, I can seat 12, 14 people in this thing. put all the luggage you can imagine. I can put me and four buddies in there and put a bunch of kayaks in the back. And
yeah.
I mean, you know, I need, I can land it on a grass strip, but I'm going to need a pretty long runway to get it up. So,
yeah,
you know, but I mean, again, there's 1,000 different aircrafts for, that are available. It's just a matter of you have to decide which one's going to fit for whatever it is you're trying to do. So,
yeah. Would you ever pursue flying a helicopter?
For sure.
Is that something that's...
Dude, if you don't like helicopters, you're not even a real man. You know?
That's fair. That's fair.
It's like there's this joke. It's like you can't be... You're not a real man unless you hear a helicopter if you don't look up.
Oh,
look
yes!
Yeah, you're not a real man if you don't look up at the helicopter. You don't stop what you're doing and look up at the helicopter.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a truthful statement.
It's funny.
Your grandpa used to be in the aviation industry, actually working on airplanes with an AMP, is that right?
No. So my grandfather was in the Air Force,
okay.
And he learned sheet metal in the Air Force.
I see.
And so as he was learning sheet metal, they asked him, well, would you rather learn aviation sheet metal or would you rather learn like commercial sheet metal? And my grandfather kind of waited out and said, well, if I go aviation, I'm going to have to move to some type of big city to be able to have a job like that where I'm working on aircraft. He goes, but if I do commercial, like I can pretty much move anywhere I want and I can have a job.
Yeah.
And so he chose the commercial side and basically can make, you know, sheet metal ductwork for commercial buildings, industrial buildings, residential homes, so all that stuff.
This was during his tenure of working in the Air Force or after his Air Force he got trained to get into
in the Air Force? Yeah, he went as an MP and then learned sheet metal after he was being an MP in the military.
I see. What do you think is your biggest fear in HVAC? This could go all over the place, so I'm happy to take it wherever you're willing to take it.
Wow, that's a good one. Might have to edit this and freaking pause for dramatic effect.
Yeah, bass drop it, like, yeah, exactly.
My biggest fear in HVAC is probably being out of the field long enough that the industry passes me by on a technical level.
I could see that.
So, you know, I'm not out in the field every day, right? Like yeah. I used to be. So, I mean, when I was, and when I was just out selling stuff, like I had to stay on top of technology. I had to stay on top of what's what, right?
Yeah.
So I could talk about units and know exactly how they operate and what the capacities are and what their capabilities are and what the applications are, right?
Yeah.
And I feel like as technology just keeps changing and we're moving to new refrigerants and the A2Ls and stuff like that, I personally haven't messed with any A2Ls, right?
Yeah.
So, I'm just, you know, if I stay out of the field long enough, then all this stuff kind of passes me by. And yeah, I might be able to read up on it and stay current on book stuff, but I now lose the hands-on experience with it, right? So I think that's probably one of my biggest fears. That's probably it.
You know what was fascinating for me to hear is when you were running your company, even though you were still primarily sales, you would still go out and do installs, you know? And you or at least help out at the bare minimum. You'd do installs,
yeah,
you'd do
I mean,
a little bit of service, you know? You played around a little bit.
I did what I had to do for sure. But there's a part of me that enjoyed it, right?
Like you get bored easily, right?
I totally get bored easily, yeah. For a long time I would always joke around and say, man, I get so bored with something I just ditch it and go do something else, right? Because I'm ready for something new. And I would always make a joke that it's a miracle that I've been married for as long as I've been married. I think for me it's like the stresses of being in an office and dealing with clients all day, selling stuff, and like being able to break free and go put my hands on a piece of equipment and fix a problem, right? Diagnose the problem, repair the problem, or go onto a job site on an install and just spend, even if it was just a couple hours, right? Just spending a few hours on the job site and, you know, chopping it up with the guys and, you know, welding some lines together and, you know, just making sure the vacuum's pulled right, flushing line, whatever the case may be, you know, running some wires. Like, I love wiring. Wiring is probably one of my favorite things that I get to do. wiring and probably running pipes.
Yeah.
So just the cleanliness of when it's all done, you know?
Yeah.
So, but yeah, that's it.
Do you have a, do you have a piece of advice? So this was a question that I think you had asked, when you were hosting some chiropractors on your podcast. You had asked, I believe, a question talking about, you know, a $5 fix in comparison to HVAC. Like, for example, us as technicians, we know that your air filter is one of the most important yet simplest things that a homeowner can do, or you can do as a technician, to constantly replace, to keep that system running as optimal as possible for as long as possible. And for you, given the fact that you've now delved into your health journey a little bit more, do you think that there's a, you know, $5 fix, something that you would just stay on top of, that's so small, so minute, but makes a huge difference in the long run?
From a health perspective?
From a health perspective. Something that's affected you, or something that you've gotten better at, that's made your life 10 times easier because you've started doing it.
I mean, probably a couple different things, not just one thing, but one thing for me is definitely going to the chiropractor on a regular basis.
Yeah.
I just actually did another chiropractor podcast. It's not done yet. It's not out yet. This will probably come out before that comes out, because that was like an hour and a half long, and there's a lot of editing involved. But yeah, chiropractor for sure. Watching what I eat, I probably eat way less sugar now. Then obviously you see me slurping down this Red Bull, right? But this is not,
you gotta do
not
what
a
you gotta
regular
do.
Thing.
Sure.
And I exercise on a regular basis now.
Yeah.
So whereas before I didn't, you know. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I think as I'm getting older, like there's a lot of things about me that are just changing, and not like, oh, I notice my body's changing. It's not like that. It's just that my mindset is changing, right? And so as I'm getting older, I'm getting wiser, and I'm gaining more knowledge just about life in general and my health and what's important and why I should do certain things, and you know, applying the mastering your craft aspect that I just was so honed in on, yeah, with HVAC for so many years, right? Now beginning to apply that to other things. And so for me, one of the biggest things right now is my spiritual walk and my faith, right? So
yeah,
I probably spend more time doing that than I do dealing with my physical health. So
yeah,
I'm more interested in my spiritual health than I am in my physical health.
Yeah. So. Well, that's important, I think. I think a lot of people, you know, their spiritual walk is important to them, and you know, teach their own. Everybody has their own opinions and their own beliefs. But I think that it's important. I think it's a ground zero. If all else fails, you have your religion to kind of, you know, lean back on, I feel like, you know. And if you don't have religion, in my opinion, you don't have a true zero, a true ground, a true base of like, okay, here are the principles that I believe in, and then build on top of those principles. Maybe you can agree or disagree, but I think, in my opinion, I feel like religion is important for me because it shows me what true level is.
I think a lot of people, this is probably going to offend some people.
Offend people.
But that's okay.
That's what the Tactical Podcast is.
I believe that people only turn to God or religion when people who don't like look at that stuff on a regular basis, like it's just not important to them, right?
Sure.
But they're quick to turn back to that when their life hits rock bottom or when their life shatters into pieces, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, you know, why do you go back to that when it gets that bad?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So if you run back to that when life gets that bad, then why aren't you dwelling in that from the very beginning, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's kind of just a cycle I think that a lot of people live in, right? But a lot of people will be like, oh, I don't even believe in God, blah, 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 blah. And then when bad things happen, it's just like, oh my God, why is this happening to me? It's just, you know.
Yeah, they're being reactive.
For sure.
Is that what you'd say? Another thing too, and kind of a similar topic, there was a podcast that I was watching. I can't remember who it was in particular, but I know Andrew Tate was in there as well. Regardless of your opinions, I thought this was hilarious. he was talking to some other guy and talking about the submarine that had ended up imploding at the bottom of the sea somewhere.
Right, I remember.
And and so I think Andrew Tate said something to the effect that, oh, those guys were praying regardless of their religion. They were praying for God, you know, because they knew that there was no way out of this.
When your life is on the line, dude, all of a sudden things change, right? Your thoughts change, your heart changes. There's a lot of things that happen, right? And then you escape it, and then you're like, okay, let's get back to the regular life, right?
So,
yeah, it's just funny, man, the way that people, and I've got to tell you, man, that I'm not any different, right? Like, I've definitely hit rock bottom in my life, and I've gone back to God and, you know, had these conversations. But, you know, I'm to a point now in my life where I'm not at rock bottom anymore, right? Yeah. Like, I feel like I'm in a really good place. I'm in really good physical health. I'm in really good spiritual health. And obviously, I always want to be better. I always want to do more, right? But I'm just trying to stay consistent, right? So, man, I'm just, you know, I'm just seeking God, man. And I'm seeking Him fervently.
Yeah, so that's a big word. I don't know what that means. Can you explain it? Because I doubt other people probably know.
Yeah, with a purpose, with passion, with a desire. So
that's solid.
Yeah.
So I want to start wrapping this up a little bit, and so this is going to be a two-part question, and I'd like for you to answer the first part first. Is there anyone in the industry when you were first being raised that you looked up to for guidance or for skill? Or all of the above, and then once you answer that, then I'll ask you the second part.
Dude, my grandpa was the man. Yeah, my grandpa was the fix-it guy for everything. I needed this. Go to grandpa's house. I need to do that. Go to grandpa's house, right? You know, I was driving a truck. I had my own truck probably when I was like, man, I don't know. 8-9 years old.
Wow.
And mobbing through the back row. It was a 1973 Chevy Custom. I mean, a 3/4 ton. It was a nice little truck, but wow. Nonetheless, I asked my dad, what are you gonna do with that? He's like, if you get it running, you can have it. Okay, so I got it running.
Yeah.
And so I was the kid who would go pick up all my cousins and my friends, and we'd throw everything in the back of the truck, and we'd go out on, you know, state land, and we go camping for 2 days. And I mean, I would never let my kids do anything like that at that age, for sure.
Yeah.
But it was just a different time back then, you know? But it was in things like that where I'm like, I don't know how to do this. I don't know how to fix this. My grandpa did, right? Yeah. So I go to my grandpa, oh, you got to do it like this and like that, right? And so my grandpa taught me a lot. My grandpa taught me how to weld. He taught me how to lay out sheet metal. My grandpa taught me, you know, how to solder pipes. I mean, my grandpa taught me a lot of stuff. Fortunately, my grandpa's still around. Not a lot of guys my age still have their grandparents,
yeah.
So I'm super grateful for that. But you know, dementia is kind of kicking in for him, and so it's been challenging, to say the least. And so, you know, I don't know how much time I have with him anymore, and so I'm just trying to really just make the best of it, because he's going to be greatly missed when he's gone.
Yeah, I think that's truly important, that you're cognizant of appreciating the time that you spend with them. And then I guess lastly is, this could be several people, this could be several individuals, you know, dealer's choice, I guess. But is there anybody currently that you look up to, whether that be in the realm of HVAC, in the realm of business?
Oh man, there's a lot of people, dude. A lot of people. Where do I even start, man? From a technical aspect, man, Brian Orr, right? HVAC school. I have a huge amount of respect and admiration for that man. He's done incredible things for the industry. He's probably the smartest guy in the room, pretty much any time. Craig Migliaccio, Brett Wetzel, I mean, dude, there's so many guys. Chris Stevens.
Yeah.
Trying to think who else, man. Off the top of my head, they're just, the technical ability of these guys is just through the freaking. Ty Brandeman. Right?
Yeah. Ty. There's so many people.
Eugene Silberstein. Like, these guys are just incredibly intelligent human beings, right? And they've taken the time to master their craft, right?
Yeah.
And again, like I always say, like, I don't care what it is you do for a living, dude. Take the time to be exceptional at it, right? Practice excellence in whatever it is that you do. You know, from a business side of things, I mean, you look at people like, dude, look at Angel. Look at Angel Hernandez, HVAC boss, right? Yeah. Like, dude, he runs an incredible company, and he built that thing from nothing, right? And he started out as a service tech, started his own company. 20 years later, he's running an incredible operation. He's an incredible boss, right? Talks a lot of crap, but, you know,
who doesn't?
At the end of the day, that's what makes him who he is.
Yeah.
And he has a lot of respect from his guys. He's built an incredible culture. He gives back to his team. You know, I mean, dude, I look up to that, right? Like, if I was going to run a company that big, like, that's who I would want to do, right? That's who I would want to be. That's who I'd want to be like. Yeah. There's another guy, not a lot of people know about him. His name's John Shamhorn. He's an incredible business guy. And I had, at one point in time in my career, I had an opportunity to try to get to be a partner with him. And we just never linked up. And, man, I look back to see what he's done in his career, and I'm just like, man, I missed the boat on that thing. You know what I mean? So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of guys out there. Josh Campbell, Rescue Air out of Richardson, Texas, dude. Well, he's younger than me. Incredible business guy. Incredible culture in his company. Wow. He's done a great job, man, building that company up. And there's, I mean, that's just a couple of a bunch of dudes out there, right?
Sure.
There's guys all over the country, all over the world that have done an incredible job. So, yeah, I don't just limit this to like, hey, here's five guys that I, you know, this is my circle. It's like, no, man, there's masters of their craft everywhere you look. And the real masters of their craft aren't out there bragging about how awesome they are.
Yeah.
Right?
That is true.
If you're really great at what you do, you don't have to say it. Other people will say it for you.
I agree. So to finalize everything, what are some key takeaways that we can walk away with? Some, you know, in 10 seconds or less, some nuggets that you'd pass on. If we forgot everything else from this podcast...
I would say, whatever you do, however you decide you want to do it with excellence, do it with purpose, do it with drive, do it with passion, be great at what you do. I don't care if it's working at McDonald's, I don't care if you're waiting tables, I don't care if you're fixing vehicles, if you're pumping gas for somebody. You know, they don't pump gas for you in Texas, but they'll pump gas for you in New Jersey.
Yeah.
So I don't care what it is you're doing. Do it with excellence. Be the best that you can do it. Be the best that you can be and do it the best that you can do it. That's how people are going to notice, and that's how you're going to level up, right? If you have somebody, if somebody presents themselves in front of me and whatever, not even that long, a couple weeks back, I was at a Dutch Brothers coffee, right? The girl meets me out to take my order, and she starts talking to me, and she asks me, how am I? I said, I'm unstoppable. How are you? She stopped and looked at me, and she said, she started going on all of these words that were basically another word for unstoppable, right? And she probably named off 7 or 8 words, and I was just like, wow. And I was just like, man, if I had a job opening right now, I would offer you a job.
Wow.
I mean, that's the kind of people that I would want on my team, right?
Yeah.
People who are running great companies, people who have great culture, are looking for those type of people.
Yeah.
Whether it be an air conditioning company, a plumbing company, a CPA firm, it doesn't matter what the industry is, right?
Yeah.
People want great people with great attitudes who are ready to learn and excel and be great at what they do, right?
Yeah.
So when you have this passion and this desire that just bleeds from you,
yeah,
people around you notice. People around you are attracted to that,
yeah,
and people around you will begin to ask you, what do you do for a living? Where are you at right now? How much money do you make? Are you looking to change careers, right? Because now all these opportunities will begin to open up. And really, it all boils down to your attitude and your mindset, man. So it all boils down to your mindset, and that's why I always say it's a mindset.
Don't you have that on a t-shirt? Yeah. Where can we find that t-shirt, Ben?
You can find that t-shirt at yomama.com.
I think that's the wrong website.
You can find that t-shirt at hvactactical.com. So.
HVCtactical.com. Ben, thank you so much. It was awesome spending some time with you, being able to pick your brain a little bit and see what goes on inside the factory in there. So thanks again, man.
Yeah, appreciate for sure. It. And I think I'm getting pulled over, so I gotta go.
Oh, shit.